everybody, and welcome to the Alternative Media. I am your host, Patrick Slattery. Farron is still on his leave of absence. I promise he will be back. Not saying when, but I'll be around for a couple more weeks, I have the feeling. And today we have a an extra special guest. He's agreed to come back, Benjamin Fulford. Independent and really independent-minded journalist, international journalist from stationed in Japan. He's well known as the former Asia Pacific bureau chief for Forbes magazine. Prior to that, he worked for South China Morning Post, the Nikkei Shimbun newspaper, which is the Japan Economic Journal, Thomson Reuters, and others. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you back. And a lot's been going on in Japan over the past week or so. I mean, earth-shaking developments, literally.
Yeah, well, that's as I said, I wanted to talk about this because my first instinct was that these were natural earthquakes because Japan does have a lot of natural earthquakes. However, I now believe that they are not natural, and there are several reasons for this. First of all, if you look at the seismographs, you will see when an earthquake is caused by an explosion, there's a sudden shake followed by increasingly smaller aftershakes. Whereas if it's a natural earthquake, it's like shake, you know, sort of building up to the big shake and then winding down. And these are all show the characteristics of a shake caused by an explosion, not by you know, rocks sort of creaking against each other. The other thing is that the epicenters of these earthquakes happen to coincide exactly with the locations of major Japanese military bases. And I looked at the Google coordinates, you know, on Google Earth, and you can see what looked very much like entrances to underground bases at each of these places. I know this is weird stuff. It's kind of X-Files type things, but you know, it's a fact that in this age of nuclear war, that militaries build deep underground bases. It's not, you know, conspiracy theory. They do that. It's known, and Japan certainly had some, and it appears that they've been attacked.
Okay, and now the epicenters, were they in southern Japan, the island of Kyushu? Is that where these military bases would be?
Yes, all on the island of Kyushu and very close to the Korean Peninsula. Now, there's another hint about what may be going on in the fact that Japanese Finance Minister Taro Aso, whose power base is in Kyushu, by the way, Aso Cement, you know, they do all the public works down there. He said he met the American economist Paul Krugman, and he told Krugman that in the 1930s, the United States had an economic situation similar to what Japan is facing, sort of stagflation, or like a stagnant economy, and what brought them out was World War II. And he said to Krugman, we're looking for a similar trigger. And now, people in the United States may not be aware, but the Japanese government now was not actually elected. They stole the election. Over 80% of the votes were counted by machines made by a company called Musashi Engineering. Musashi Engineering, you know, originally was a company owned by Abe's grandfather.
Okay, and now Abe's grandfather, which one? Because one was the Prime Kishi. Minister Yoshida.
Yeah, no, Kishi, the war criminal.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah. Okay, Kishi, his grandfather. Because you were mentioning Finance Minister Aso, and his grandfather was another former Prime Minister, Yoshida.
Right.
But you're talking about the current Prime Minister, Abe, his grandfather, Kishi, and Kishi's family owns the company
that
makes the
voting. The results were very different from
a little bit of trouble. I don't know if it's with your Skype connection or mine. I didn't hear the last sentence you said.
Okay, the machines made by Musashi Engineering counted more than 80% of the votes And exit polls made it clear there was a big difference between the actual results, the results published, and what the exit polls said. I mean, so the understanding here is that it's a military government in Japan now. Now, the other thing to know about Musashi Engineering is that you go through several paper companies, but eventually you come. It's now owned by Fortress Asset Management, which is headed by a guy called Peter Bridger, I think, who's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a Rockefeller institution. Now, the other point that I want to make about Kyushu, southern Japan, is that this is the base of the Choshu clan. And the Choshu clan was a group that the Rothschild family used to colonize Japan.
Okay, so Kyushu, the southern island of Japan, and the Choshu clan was one of these, two big clans and two other small clans that basically took over Japan in about 1868 as part of the Meiji Isshin. Do I have that right?
That's right. And they were supplied with very high state-of-the-art weapons. And they deliberately sold inferior weapons to their opponents in Japan. But in any case, the point is that there's more to this. Now, this is also the base for the Mitsubishi Corporation and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. And they're the ones who are benefiting from Japan's new militarization. They were the
manufacturers of the Zero aircraft in World War II, correct?
Yeah, and they're manufacturing weapons now, too. And Abe, he went to Seike University, which is a Mitsubishi university. Now, the other thing is that Makihara, the guy who sort of runs the Mitsubishi group, was very friendly with David Rockefeller. So, you know, he's starting to put all these dots together. And you see, the other thing is that this big military buildup is right close to the Korean Peninsula. You know, because they were planning, I believe, a war with China, and I believe that's being stopped now. That's what I understand from all this.
And Abe, he is well known for his belligerency regarding China, for saber rattling, for going, making pilgrimages to this shrine that is very controversial because it's connected to a museum that whitewashes the Japanese war record in China, or at least that's how the Chinese feel about it. Is that correct?
That's right. And the other thing about Abe is that he's very well known for having extremely low IQ.
Okay? You know, it's funny you said that. You mentioned Seike University, and I, at one of my old universities, I had a friend whose father was a professor at Seike University, and this was just as Abe was being inaugurated for his first term, I think in 2006. And my friend's father said that when Abe was entering the university, Abe's mother came and said, "We know he's not very intelligent, but please try to do something with him."
Yeah, I've had Abe's teachers come to me and tell me the same thing, you know. But they like someone like that because he just reads the script and does what he's told. He doesn't try to go off on his own and actually pretend he runs the country, you know. But having said that, there's another very big piece of news that's happened. And because it deals with secret societies, I'm actually not allowed to talk much about it. But
well, the Asian keep your sources happy. Society, only disclose what you're allowed to.
But I can tell you this. The Asian Red and Blue Society, which has about 55 million members around the world now, has had a change of leadership. And this is very important because the previous leadership, unfortunately, chickened out when it came to dealing with the Khazarian mafia. And the new leadership is actually ready to take action. And this will be visible in world changes, okay? This I won't say much more than that, except that they prefer to action to words, and you'll see it with events, not with, you know, bluster and talk, okay? Mm-hmm. That's how much I can say. But these are good people, and their ultimate goal is world peace. Okay. And it's not a bad thing, okay? They're not going to, you know, hurt innocent people or anything like that, okay? But this is a very big development, and it's this will lead to a lot of changes.
Okay. Now, getting back to the earthquakes, you know, I'm not somebody who immediately latches on to, you know, non-obvious conspiratorial explanations for things. And we've talked about, you know, the feasibility of seismic weapons in the past, earthquake weapons in the past. And while I'm a skeptic, I'll admit I'm a skeptic, in the past you've pointed out that there were, in the 1970s, treaties between the United States and the USSR banning the development of seismic weapons. And I have been able to verify that. I think our listeners could too. It's, you know, there are documents that you would be able to find on U.S. government websites referring to this. And so if people didn't think the seismic weapons were plausible, there wouldn't be any motivation to waste time on a treaty banning them.
The other thing you can check is on the Pentagon official homepage. You go back to the 1997 transcript where you have the Secretary of Defense saying that...
Yeah, William Cohen.
Yeah, we'll be able to use earthquake weapons to, you know, to scalar weapons to set off earthquakes and you know, start volcanoes, make them active.
And I did check this, and you were correct. There is such a document, and you can find this from, I guess it's Defense Department website. So that much, at least there are people out there at top levels of government who think that these types of weapons are feasible or plausible. So whether they're behind this earthquake or other earthquakes is a different matter, but certainly it's not as far-fetched as it might seem at first glance.
Now, here's another thing people might not be aware of. This source of this was Boris Yeltsin, the former president of Russia. He said that the Japanese government tells only very high-level people that they actually have nuclear missiles. And this, you know, one thing you can confirm through, you know, public media is that Japan has lots and lots of plutonium. And
they certainly do.
The hardest thing about making a nuclear weapon is to create plutonium. And if you have the plutonium, you can take a lump of plutonium and drop it on from a ladder onto another lump, and that alone would start a nuclear explosion. And, of course, they have rocket technology. So, but what's interesting is that it seems that the Americans are trying to force them to dismantle their nuclear missile fleet, and that's why suddenly North Korea has, you know, announced ballistic missile submarines and stuff like that. This is Japanese technology, you know, being used through North Korea. Is the other thing that's going on out here.
You make a good point about all the Japanese have all the technology for nuclear weapons. I had a Japanese colonel say that they could weaponize their technology within a couple of months, and you don't have to have an inside source because, we all know they have a nuclear power industry. We all know that because, you know, of the meltdown. They have had for over 30 years this complete nuclear cycle. They have the Monju reactor, which is a plutonium reactor that, you know, it has the what do they call it? Recycling plutonium. So they have plenty of plutonium. They have the ability to reprocess it. They have the ability to enrich uranium. They have all the idea that they would not have the technical capability that Americans had during the Manhattan Project, I mean, is completely laughable. So the only thing that would stand between them and nuclear weapons would be a simple political decision that they don't want nuclear weapons. And if that's the case, the simple political decision that they do want nuclear weapons would give them nuclear weapons in no time. And of course they have launched satellites into orbit. Their space program has not been the best of their technological developments. They've had more trouble with their space programs than with a lot of other areas, but they certainly have, had a certain amount of success lifting satellites into orbit. So, the idea that Japan could have nuclear weapons is more than plausible.
Now, an upset about Japan for now, other than to say that the, nobody's going to let these wackos start World War III, you know, either here or in the Middle East or anywhere else. The reason for that is because the Pentagon has run simulations, and each time the result is the same. 90% of people die, and the Northern Hemisphere becomes uninhabitable. So it's just not a rational choice. And the only people trying to start this are these religious fanatics who think that they need to create Armageddon. And fortunately, these people are being systematically removed from power. And they were trying to start. You remember Benjamin, was it Friedman, who said after the Cuban Missile Crisis that there were these fanatic Zionists who wanted to start Armageddon. And he came out and said this. And they were trying to start a nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the U.S. That failed. Then they tried to start one with Iran, you know, and that failed. I mean, they've been trying and trying, and it's just not going to happen. And they're...
Yeah, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Okay, so you had mentioned that the last Japanese election, you believe, was stolen. And you talked about the machinery, the election machinery. And certainly... as somebody who viewed it from the outside, you had Prime Minister Abe who had inherited his job because, he was elected into the job, but he was taking a pro-nuclear position that you start up all the nuclear power plants at a time when, the Japanese public was pretty anti-nuclear. And so it seemed kind of strange he was elected. The explanation we heard outside of Japan was that the then ruling party was in such disarray that there was just, you know, didn't seem to be any alternative. And so even though Abe's positions weren't popular, he won the election. Is there much sense in Japan that the election was stolen? Is that a widely held point of view? The way, for instance, after the 2000 election, a lot of people thought Bush had stolen the election here.
Yeah, it's a little bit like 9/11 in the U.S., where on the internet, it's kind of like everybody knows that was an inside job, but the official newspapers and stuff still don't say it, because if they do, then action has to be taken, you know? And there's a group called the Japan Independence Party, run by a guy called Richard Koshimizu, and they had activists.
Richard?
That's not his real name, but that's what he calls himself. His people had various stations, polling stations, checking this out.
Okay, I hear our music. We're going to talk to you more about this after the break.
And I want to talk about finance.
We will certainly do that after the Sheikh of Araby.
He's the Sheikh of Araby, as you can plainly see. Bum, 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 bum.
We are back with Benjamin Fulford. I love that music.
Yeah,
it's so much. Yeah, it's so much fun being able to choose bumper music. Not that there was anything wrong with Ferenc, but I like to impose my tastes on other people sometimes. Okay, so we were talking. You were talking about the this Zeitgeist, or the name of an article, and it was about the Japanese nuclear industry.
November 2007 edition. I have a copy in my hand right now. It says there was a CIA report that Japan was producing too much of its energy from nuclear power, and that if they kept doing that, they wouldn't have to buy oil from the Middle East, and that means they wouldn't have to listen to the Americans. So the plan was to destroy Tokyo Electric Power in order to, you know, get Japan to shut down its nuclear industry. This was in... You know, I'll send you a copy of the magazine, but someone from the Pentagon apparently leaked the CIA report to the Japanese. So it shows that there was a very clear motive and pre-planning in the Fukushima attack. But like I said, I don't want to get into that too much now because there's other things I'd like to talk about. The big thing is all the financial meetings that were taking place in Washington, as you know, the Vice President Biden and President Obama, and it's very rare for a president to meet the head of the Fed, and it's even more rare for the Vice President and the President to meet the head of the Fed. And what I heard from my sources, two separate sources, one CIA, one Pentagon, that Janet Yellen said that the big banks, that's Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, I think, and Mellon Bank. Anyway, these banks were bankrupt, and they wanted to steal depositors' money in order to keep them in business. And in order, and they wanted the U.S. military to help put down the expected riots that would happen when they did this. And the military told her to buzz off. No, we're not going to do that, they said. And instead, you have these unprecedented public leaks or actually publications, for example, by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, basically saying that these big banks are bankrupt. And they are. They keep themselves going through fraud and through market manipulation and through jacking up the stock market. But mathematically, they're bankrupt. And that's because they've been turned into giant casinos and their bets have gone south. So something huge is happening on that front.
Mm-hmm.
There are negotiations going on. You saw Obama, he flew off to Saudi Arabia and then Germany and then England. That was a part of
it. He's kind of snubbed in Saudi Arabia, too.
Well, you know, that's because you notice that Saudi Arabia said they were going to sell their $750 billion in U.S. bonds. Well, no, they're not, because they've already been confiscated. That's why Saudi Arabia went out to borrow $10 billion to keep themselves going. If they had $750 billion, they wouldn't have to borrow $10 billion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think they were read the Riot Act. They said, you know, they're a very, very nasty regime. My father used to be the Canadian ambassador to Saudi Arabia. I was there.
I'm aware of that, yes.
They have public beheadings on Fridays and cutting off hands. And if you're married and you're caught cheating, they bury up to the waist and then they throw rocks at you until you're dead. I mean, this is that kind of country. And it's a privately owned playpen for the Saud family. It's not a country per se. It's like private property.
It's a country that is literally named after its ruling family. I mean, Saudi does not designate a geographic area. It's a family.
Yeah, and they've been financing these obscurantist Wahhabist terrorists around the world. And the whole planet is sick of them. And they're going to be forced to pay compensation money for all the trouble they've caused. And they've been read the Riot Act.
It's pretty well known they've been one of the forces behind ISIS, along with Turkey and Israel and probably parts of the United States government to a large extent.
Sure. And the thing is, they've been recycling all their petrodollars into certain banks and giving power to, you know, these what I call Khazarian mafiosi. Mm-hmm. You might want to call them Jewish oligarchs or something, but they're not actually Jewish.
Well, that's who we're referring to.
Yeah, and so this whole thing is being cleaned up. The other thing that happened was Benjamin Netanyahu went to Russia last week, where basically what my sources tell me, he was told that, look, you know, Israel is going to have to abide by the various UN resolutions that, you know, like to withdraw the 1967 lines, get out of the Golan Heights. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, all measures will be taken. And I think that would include a total blockade of that country and a closing of all their foreign bank accounts and even military action until they stop.
Oh, is that Hank Williams? Yes, it is. He's here to tell us that we'll be back after the break with Benjamin.
Just stood there and never let it show, so she could never answer yes or no.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
That is the Tiger Rag. We are back with Benjamin Fulford, formerly of Forbes magazine, Asia Pacific Bureau Chief, but now the international independent journalist. And you were talking about this situation with Israel being perhaps read the Riot Act.
That's right. And the thing, though, that people in Israel and the Jews in general need to understand is that they have been brainwashed into extreme paranoia with all this Holocaust stuff. And the thing that they need to understand very clearly is that nobody is going to kill them. Nobody's going to hurt them. Nothing bad is going to happen. They're just going to be liberated from control of fanatic gangsters who themselves are not actually Jewish. That's all that's going to happen. So, you know, they don't need to worry. That's the big thing I want to get through there.
Mm. Yeah. Now, of course, even if paranoia is not based on reality, the paranoia itself becomes a reality. And so they're a country who has been supplied with all the technology to create hundreds of nuclear warheads. And they have Germany, of all countries, suicidally supplying it with nuclear-capable Dolphin-class submarines for free, or some for free, and then some at a huge discount, at a great loss to Germany. They have the Jericho intercontinental ballistic missiles that could strike the United States. They've got what's supposed to be the third biggest air force in the world. So reading them the Riot Act with such paranoid people at the helm, how can they be reined in?
Well, it's already happening. You'll notice that the Patriot missiles were removed from Turkey and Israel. You can confirm this in regular news outlets. And instead, the Russians put in their Su-300 and 400 in Syria and places like that, which means that essentially the Israeli and Turkish air forces have been grounded. So that alone has changed the entire equation. And the thing, though, is that the Middle East in general needs to sort out some historical issues. And I think at the end of the day, the best solution would be a kind of a loose Muslim federation, including the Shias. And the other thing is that the entire Shia-Sunni thing, which they've been deliberately trying to turn into a source of fighting, it's just an inheritance dispute between cousins, and that needs to be solved, and that can be solved. You know, the entire planet is sick and tired of all the troubles in the Middle East, and they're sick and tired of all these mercenary companies, you know, fomenting war so they can sell weapons. And, what's going to happen now is that we're going to, you know, if necessary, we're going to go after the actual shareholders of the big military corporations, the owners of the trust funds that control these things. You know, we're going to go after the head of the octopus. We're going to decapitate them if they don't stand down. You know, this is a clear warning. We're not going to let them continue murdering and causing mayhem anymore. The entire planet is sick and tired of these people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to do something about it.
I have a question. Now, I believe September 30th, President Putin sent his Air Force to Syria. They conducted a lot of operations against ISIS and other what they defined as terrorist groups. And there seems to be changes on the ground, which a lot of people would call progress. Is Putin in a position, and do you think he has the inclination and the resources to be instrumental in ushering in these types of really fundamental changes for the better in that region? What do you think, Benjamin?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is there's been a very rough agreement between the U.S. military-industrial complex and the Russians that the Russians get one side of the Euphrates River and the Americans the other, you know, because the U.S. military needs an awful lot of oil, and they wanted to just make sure they got oil for their ships and their planes and stuff. And so there's a basic agreement reached there. Now, the other thing that needs to be worked out is the Russians are stopping the flow of oil through Turkey, which is a good thing because Turkey has been acting very irrationally and dangerously, and they've become a rogue state under Erdogan, and something needs to be done about that, and it will be. But at the same time, the historical injustices of the region all need to be settled out. Some kind of big powwow is going to be needed to clean that place up once and for all. But the Russians, together with the Americans, basically can tell those people what to do, and they'll have to listen. And the Chinese will back this. So basically, so
if the Americans and the Russians are on the same page.
Yeah. The people who are not on the same page, and this is where, you know, again, it gets complicated, but it's what I call the Nazis, or the Nazi faction of the Khazarian Mafia. And my belief is that it's the Bush family, the oligarchs in the Ukraine, the Saudis, Qatar, Turkey, and to some extent the people behind Abe are part of this network. And they're the source of the problem. And something's going to have to be done about this. And it is being done.
Yeah. I tend to use different terminology, but pretty much the same, that same scorecard, or that same.
Just new world order is being up.
But
in any case, that General Dunford, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is a good man, and he is the person who's in a position to, you know, really make this planet a much saner, more peaceful, healthier place. And there are some, you know, high-level financial negotiations going on. As I've said, that right now, this is what people need to understand. Finance is the process of deciding what we as a species do in the future, okay? People work for money. The people who create money, therefore, decide what work people will do. Sure, there's, you know, the market and you know, supply and demand and all that stuff, but the central banks and the money creation process is being a huge secret source of power, and they've tried to cover this up with, you know, all sorts of smoke and mirrors. But if that process of creating and distributing money is given to the people, we can literally spend trillions or tens of trillions of dollars in cleaning up this planet, turning the deserts green, refilling the oceans with fishes, all that kind of stuff can be done. And the Asians have offered their legendary gold hoards at a 13% discount, mm-hmm. That 10% of that going to, fixing up the planet. And okay. The Chinese came up with a scheme for a $50 trillion global energy grid, okay, and $50 trillion, that's like 3,000 times what the World Bank spends every year. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of scale of good works that can be made possible if we come to an agreement and end this financial war that's been going on behind the scenes.
Okay. Hey, if anybody has a question for Benjamin Fulford, our number is 1-800-313-9443. So please continue, Benjamin.
Okay, so I'm actually involved in these negotiations, and I'm hoping I'll soon be able to meet with some senior U.S. people. And I've been given the Asians have told me clearly that they back this plan, and I believe the Europeans now. So it's really now the people in Washington D.C. in New York who need to be convinced, mm-hmm. that this is a really good plan. And I think the man who can do this is General Dunford. And I'm hoping...
I have a question for you. Last time I was in Japan, I turned on the TV, and there you were. You were on one of the network shows. And I know you do meet with, you know, people in the media, people in politics in Japan, high-level people. When you talk about these things to them, how do they react? If you talk about, like, you know, the Chinese have such and such plan, what kind of response do you get?
Well, the problem, they say, is that Japan is a colony, and that I have to take it up with the Americans. That's basically what they come back. They agree.
Do some people just kind of, like, their jaw drops and they say, what are you talking about? Do you get that as well?
No, they understand. I mean, it was the Japanese who originally convinced me that government in the West was not what we thought it was, that it was actually controlled by the people who control finance, not by the presidents and prime ministers you see on your TV set. And I had took a lot of time for me to get that into my head and do the research and fact check. But yes, it turns out that is the case. And this is the source of all this so-called conspiracy theory. It's the fact that the finance is privately owned and controlled by a group of families who were, unfortunately, Zionist religious fanatics with end-of-the-world ideas, you know, basically wackos in charge of finance, and now we're removing them. Yeah, the Japanese, they say, yeah, it's a great idea, and they just got to convince the Americans, and that's what I've been trying to do. And I've already convinced the Europeans and the Chinese and everybody except the people in the military-industrial complex, and I think they're coming around, too. Certainly, I think the CIA people understand and agree with what I'm saying. It's just common sense. And the means for carrying this out, I can say, meritocracy, which is, like the Vatican is a meritocracy, the Pentagon's a meritocracy, the Chinese Communist Party is a meritocracy, corporations are meritocracies. And as long as they're transparently run with freedom of the press and sort of bottom-up democracy, this can be a very healthy system of running things.
Sometimes some of the stuff you're talking about sounds kind of far-fetched, but I will say that when I've gone to Japan to do research and I asked Benjamin to lend me some connections, he's gotten me in touch with all sorts of people, members of parliament, cabinet ministers, the first lady of Japan, Prime Minister Kan's wife.
Touch with Mr. Abe next time you come if you want.
So one thing that we can certainly establish is Benjamin is very well connected in Japan and elsewhere, but his base of operations has been in Japan. How about this, Benjamin? We are hearing a lot in our presidential election about China in the South China Sea and having this, I guess they've built up an artificial island on the Spratly Reefs or something like that. And it seems as if certain forces in America are trying to use this as some sort of wedge between Japan and China or China and other Asian countries.
Yeah, no, basically, the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon people, they've told me that if something happened to the United States like happened to the Soviet Union, where suddenly the general, the taxi driver becomes a taxi driver in London to make a living, they'll fight a war rather than have that happen to them. So they're trying to find a reasonable, a morally correct stance U.S. military to take. They think, okay, we want to prevent China from being a bully and, intimidating countries around it. And, I think the Chinese are happy. I mean, they're not happy, but they understand this. And I've told the Chinese it's better, it makes more sense to feed a dog than to fight a wolf. And I've actually recommended that the Chinese finance the U.S. military-industrial complex and then get them to do good stuff like protect the planet and stop poachers. All that kind of stuff. So, but basically, the promoting the South China thing is the U.S. bargaining card, saying, "Look, if we don't get a good deal on this financial thing, we're going to start a war and we're going to just create an excuse somewhere." And it's just bargaining talk. It's just table thump. It's not a real crisis.
Hey, we have a caller. We have Daniel in West Virginia. Daniel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here in West Virginia, the land where the on top of the Capitol building may fly a fasci with the globe on top, with the phoenix on top of the globe.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, as I recall. Do you have a question for Mr. Fulford?
Yes. The United States Corporation and the West Virginia Corporation has an agreement, and it's an agreement amongst all the states that in most cases they can convert children and the special needs children, and they come take children from families at gunpoint and on fraudulent claims. And then they get supplied 3-to-1 federal funding under Title 4D and 4E of the Social Security Act. And we got all this international stuff, and all, we Americans, people think they're U.S. citizens, seem to think that the whole world is tyrannical, while here we've got corporations taking, breaking up families, breaking down families, for the sake of 3-to-1 federal funding. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why, to what benefit it would be for the United States Corporation to fund the West Virginia Corporation in the taking of children and giving them 3-to-1 federal funding for it, and making about $1 million a head off these children. And do you have any ideas on that?
Thanks for your call. And Benjamin, there was one case just in the news a week ago about a child being taken away from a family because she was 1/16th Indian and her tribe was claiming her. There is some weird stuff that happens. Do you have any answer for this?
Well, the answer is that at a certain point, the military is going to have to come in and start arresting the people who've been running this sort of stuff. I mean, people like Bill Gates belong in jail, not in the head of, you know, powerful foundations, you know, vaccinating people with God knows what. And the privatized prison system has become a slave labor. Someone who worked for a financial company in Singapore told me he'd seen bonds that were backed by U.S. slave labor. So clearly, you know, you need a revolution in the United States.
I don't know. You know, so much of the military has also been brainwashed. Not all of it, but certainly big hunks. So, there is a lot going on here.
Yeah, and I think that a big cleanup is needed in the United States, and it's going to start. I mean, the time has passed for just politely complaining. It's time to actually take action, but it needs to be coordinated at a high level, and it needs to be done by the right people for the right reasons. But certainly, taking children away or putting homeless in the concentration camps and all that kind of stuff I'm hearing about in the United States needs to stop. And one thing they could do right away was to decriminalize drugs and take all the drug offenders out of prison. That alone would make a huge difference. You people have.
Go again. And we will be back for one more segment with Benjamin Fulford, whose father was the ambassador to Araby.
He's the Sheikh of Araby, as you can plainly see at night.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. And it is almost 11 o'clock on the East Coast, 8 o'clock on the Pacific Coast. And what time is it in your neck of the woods, Benjamin?
Just about noon.
About noon, okay. And so we were talking during the break, and you've talked about the need for a revolution, and there's a lot of things that are going on. We have this election, which is not going exactly the way some people might have planned it. And it's not as if Donald Trump is necessarily the our savior or the answer to all our problems, but he is, if nothing else, he is a catalyst for all sorts of potential changes. There's been a lot of talk about brokered conventions and having his nomination stolen from him. But even if it's not, we could very easily have a constitutional coup, a coup that would be within the boundaries of the Constitution, the way it was written, because of the way the Electoral College was set up. But he could easily have a electoral victory, and then everything could be taken away from him. I'm not going to go into the details this hour about how that could happen, but there's a lot of things that could happen. Are you hearing, Benjamin?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, I hear the military support Trump mostly. There's a faction that would like to have Biden as president, even though he's not a candidate.
One thing about Trump is he's less likely to send them off into our Armageddon. That's
clear. I think that if necessary, you might have to bankrupt the U.S. Corporation and restore the Republic of the United States of America, which basically went defunct in 1871, although a lot of you, I guess the people listening to this show know about this. But if at the end of the day, if they try to steal the election or do something like that, it's going to take, a bunch of arrests put an end to this. Maybe 6,000 of their ringleaders of the Khazarian Mafia in jail would be enough to do it. You know, we know who they are. We know where they are. And we just, if necessary, round them up, put them in a jail cell and cut off their communications and then, clean up the mess, starting at the top down, close the big financial casinos, restore soundness to the economy and the financial system. I think Trump may be the guy who can pull this off, and certainly he won't be allowed to do anything too wild and crazy, but I think the Americans are ready for something, a healthy, constructive revolution, not, French Revolution type of chaotic, bloody thing, but something, like a big cleanup. They come in there, arrest all the criminals, take them out of the office, clean the system up. And then the other thing is you need to take those big secret trust funds run by these trillionaires, and I say trillionaires, who redistribute their control of the economy to the people, because they stole it through Federal Reserve Board fraud, creating money out of thin air and putting everybody into debt slavery. You need a jubilee. You need big, big action, but really healthy action. I think that the United States is ready for it. It's going to happen. I'd be happy to provide my advice and expertise in this area, but you need to cancel all debt, redistribute the assets that were wrongly taken. I'm not saying publish genuine entrepreneurs. They should be allowed to keep what they made. But I'm talking about fraud, fraudulent money. That needs to be returned to the people. I've done the math. You could pay $400,000 to every man, woman in South United States to do this.
Well, Benjamin, we're at the end of our hour. It went so fast. We'll have to have you come back again. It's been great having you. No, we'll be back at the top of the hour. You can say one more thing if you can get it through Hank.
Yeah, time for a revolution.
Thank you. It's time for a revolution. We'll all agree with that.
Let's do it.
Too stubborn to ever show a sign, because his heart was made of knotty pine.